It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. New challenges face journalism. Disbelief in fact and even open hostility, just to name a couple of the big ones that have emerged in the past couple of years. We want to discuss the increasingly challenging media environment for journalists with my guest this half hour, Michael Bougeia, professor and former director of the Greenlee School of Journalism at Iowa State University. Michael has been a journalism educator for nearly 40 years. In that time, he has taught media skills and ethics to many thousands of students. In 2017, the Iowa Newspaper Association honored him with the Distinguished Service Award. He's published several books, including two award-winning ethics books, Interpersonal Divide, Searching for Community in a Technological Age, and Living Ethics Across Media Platforms. He joins us now from the studio in Ames. Michael, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you, Ben, and also thanks to veterans for their service on this special day.
Indeed. Michael, this is a time when reporters are, quote, enemies of the people, according to the president and many of his supporters, when fake news is digested as real news, and when real fact-based news is questioned as conspiracy. What do you teach aspiring journalists in such a challenging environment?
Yeah, it is challenging. One of the reasons why this has happened is the predominance of social media, and 67% of the U.S. populace gets their news primarily from Reddit, Instagram, but the biggie, Facebook. And that's just so hard to monitor. We're not going to traditional fonts of truth that have been fact-checked. And we're actually responding as if it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. That's a concerning topic for me. So teaching journalism in the age of fake news is very challenging, because we have to gather that zeal that students come in with and tell them what they're doing is important, and to keep at it. And they mostly do at Iowa State University, but this is a very complicated situation with lots of variables on why we've ended up this way.
Mm-hmm. Just refresh our memory. What are the main tenets of ethics you want to get across to journalists coming to your journalism school there at Iowa State?
Well, the fact is important. Everything that a journalist does has to be fact-based. So in other words, you have to know where to get the facts, you have to be able to present them in a manner that the audience understands, and you have to do so now not only on print or on broadcast or on radio, but you have to do it visually sometimes. You have to make sure that you achieve, that you really understand what the story is about and convey that as quickly as possible. My Interpersonal Divide research shows, Ben, that the average attention span for Americans now has dropped below 8 seconds. That's below a goldfish attention span. So this is, attention span is one of the big challenges that we have.
Mm-hmm. So what does that mean for ethics and for journalism when the attention span is shrinking?
You can't develop the story in the way that you need to convince your audience of a pressing truth. You've got to figure out how to do it quickly, cogently, and artfully to keep their attention while getting across what's the story about and then what's the story about really. And you've got to do that in less than, I think the last time I looked at it, it was 63 seconds for digital news and 123 seconds for long-form journalism. So you've got to get that out very quickly. So teaching students a new type of inverted pyramid has been a challenge, because they have to do it via text, via sound, multimedia, and it's a big challenge.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to play some audio from the president and have you comment about his role in the current environment, journalism environment. Let's listen to this. This is CNN's Abby Phillip recently asking the president a question on November 9th, as a matter of fact, about the Russia probe outside the White House as he was getting ready to board his helicopter.
The USMCA.
Do you accept Matt Whitaker to be involved in the Russia probe? Do you want him to?
It's up to him.
Do you want him to rein in Robert Mueller?
What a stupid question that is. What a stupid question. But I watch you a lot. You ask a lot of stupid questions.
President, are you ready to go?
Now, shortly after Abby Phillip asked her question about Acting Attorney General Matt Whitaker, another reporter asked about her colleague at CNN, Jim Acosta.
How long are you going to leave Jim Acosta in the penalty box?
I think Jim Acosta is a very unprofessional man. I think he does this with everybody. He gets paid to do that. You know, he gets paid to burst in. He's a very unprofessional guy. Whether it was me or Ronald Reagan or anybody else, he would have done the same thing. Look, I don't think he's a smart person, but he's got a loud voice. Wait, David, do you mind if I answer the question? And as far as I'm concerned, I haven't made that decision, but it could be others also. When you're in the White House, this is a very sacred place to me. This is a very special place. You have to treat the White House with respect. You have to treat the presidency with respect. If you've ever seen him dealing with Sarah Huckabee Sanders, it's a disgrace. And he does it for, you know, the reason. The same thing with April Ryan. I watch her get up. I mean, you talk about somebody that's a loser. She doesn't know what the hell she's doing. She gets publicity, and then she gets a pay raise, or she gets a contract with, I think, CNN. But she's very nasty, and she shouldn't be. She shouldn't be. You've got to treat the White House and the Office of the Presidency with respect.
We know Senator Nelson's lawyer said that...
Okay, well, that last little bit didn't belong to it, obviously. But the president there, you get the idea. Does he have a legitimate... complaints against the press not being respectful in to the office of the president?
Oh, well, this is a complicated question, and right now I'm pressed with the same types of issues that I try to teach my students. Look, the first celebrity that I interviewed as a professional journalist, and I believe it was in South Dakota in the 1970s, was Phyllis Schlafly on the Equal Rights Amendment. And as soon as I asked a question, she stopped me and started yelling at me and saying that United Press International was, she didn't say fake news, but was a terrible report. And she put me on such a guard that I forgot my questions. And then I asked her real softball ones. And that taught me a lesson back then to never lose your composure when someone starts to insult you. The reason why, this has been going on a long time. This is not new. Reporters have been insulted all the time. But because it's the president and because we're living in an age of 24/7 media, it seems more exacerbated. But the issue for reporters is the same. You have to maintain your composure, and you have to ask the question in a manner that elicits good news. You don't make the story about yourself. Now, the Jim Acosta thing is an interesting case study, but he does not represent journalism. He represents a kind of journalism that challenges the president, knowing that he can get under the president's skin. And that last encounter was really an episode in brinksmanship between Jim Acosta and the president. And the net result of that, Ben, is it's not good for journalism, it's not good for democracy, and I had a discussion about this with my students. I could come here and say the conventional wisdom. The conventional wisdom, Ben, would be to say the First Amendment counts, the president has a right, and he does have a right to get angry, and Jim Acosta has a right to ask penetrating questions loaded with trigger words to get under the president's skin. But what we're experiencing now is something different, and I thought long and hard before I agreed to come on here and talk to you about this, Ben, we're almost entering a kind of social media phase where reporters are asking questions that are associated with their audience base, and politicians are responding with ire and appealing to their political base. Mm-hmm. And we've lost sight of ethical questions and composed responses. If that's the case, if we're entering this new era of social media interaction between the media and political public figures, and this is going to be the new normal, then the people who are going to lose out are the people and getting the information that they need in order to make intelligent decisions in the voting booth.
Mm-hmm. So you hear in some of the news media, they're not really, well, not that they're not interested in an answer, but they are playing to their viewers or listeners as the president is playing to his base.
I'm worried if we continue to look at Jim Acosta as the touchstone here, that that's going to be what people are going to infer, that he is doing it. Look, to be honest with you, let's see if you can remember, what was the argument about between Jim Acosta and President Trump?
I'm going to say the caravan.
It was the caravan, and okay, suddenly that's off the news, right? It's gone.
Well, the election is over, and we knew it would disappear, right?
And it's gone, okay? But here's the issue. I don't know what the president answered. I can't remember. The only thing I remember is a fight. Now, if a reporter makes the question about himself or herself, we lose the fact. If the president challenges the reporter and calls the reporter names, and I've been called names too by sources too when I was a reporter, that's not new, and we don't get the news. And if what we get is a media circus, and the media circus now is playing to the base. Now, I do think that it is important when teaching journalism to explain when you give a backgrounder to a question, and that's what Jim Acosta was doing. He was using a backgrounder. A backgrounder really is, I'm going to ask a question, Mr. President, and I'm going to refresh your memory about the topic, and then I'd like you to answer. So that backgrounder now increasingly is being used by certain journalists to infuse that question with statements and speeches before you get to the question. Mm. Now, that's not new. There's a wonderful example. If you go on, people have used social media. So go on to YouTube and put President Obama and Major Garrett, CBS, stupid question. And you'll see Barack Obama waiting patiently as Major Garrett goes on for about a minute and a half with his question, loaded with trigger words to get under Obama's skin. And he just says, well, you know what? That's a really stupid question. Here's how I really feel about Iran, and you should know better. But he handles it with such composure.
Mm.
Now, Nixon actually did the same thing. I mean, right after the Saturday Night Massacre, in which he fired attorney generals and who wouldn't fire special prosecutors, he says very calmly, oh, don't get the impression, he says, well, first of all, you're outrageous, and I don't like you, the media, he says, but don't get the impression that you arouse my anger, because you have to respect somebody before you can get angry at them. And he does it with such composure. But what we have now seems very different. Back then, even in the Obama era, the audience appreciated a president using intellect and composure to present himself as a leader without name-calling. Now, earlier I talked about Phyllis Schlafly, Equal Rights Amendment. That stuff used to happen off-camera. I mean, sources used to call you all sorts of names off-camera. It didn't get on that, but digital media, all that is out there. So the concern I have, Ben, is are we entering this new normal where celebrity journalists play to their viewership base and politicians to their political base? That's something we all need to think about. And the way to teach that is to tell students, just do the facts ethically. You just have to use a backgrounder as a backgrounder. Remember, the news is not about you. It's about the topic. You're there to serve the public. That's the message I'm trying to get out.
Michael Bougie is with me this half hour. I'm a professor in the Greenlee School of Journalism at Iowa State University. He teaches media ethics and has for decades. Okay, Michael, let me challenge you with this next example of someone I would think is not at all grandstanding, example with the president. This is PBS correspondent Yamiche Alcindor. We have to note here that she is African-American. You mentioned keeping your cool. Listen to this exchange at a press conference. She wins the Keeping It Cool award, as far as I'm concerned. But let's see what you think, if she's grandstanding or if she is, how you would evaluate her in your journalism school. This is the PBS NewsHour from November 7th, PBS correspondent Yamiche Alcindor.
Hi, Mr. President. Yamiche Alcindor with PBS NewsHour. On the campaign trail, you called yourself a nationalist. Some people saw that as emboldening white nationalists. Now people are also saying
that That's such a racist question.
There are some people that say that now the Republican Party is seen as supporting white nationalists because of your rhetoric.
Make of that? I don't believe it. I don't know. Why do I have my highest poll numbers ever with African Americans? Why do I have among the highest poll numbers with African Americans? I mean, why do I have my highest poll numbers? That's such a racist question. Honestly? I mean, I know you have it written down and you're going to tell me. Let me tell you, that's a racist question.
Okay. November 7th press conference. What's your verdict, Michael?
Oh, well, we studied that in class. I mean, Yamiche had wonderful composure and she asked a legitimate question. And she, you know, that could have been answered quite appropriately. And actually, we discussed how the president should have answered it with composure. He said, look, I say the name nationalist, I just mean I'm for this country. I want to make this country great again. That's part of my slogan. I don't mean to associate it with any nefarious type of dog whistle. So, no, it's just how I use the term. Let's go on next question. But instead, we're getting... Now to be honest with you, I was talking about the Jim Acosta standard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Yamiche standard is something different. But at any time... If a president responds in that way, that plays to his base. Sometimes the journalist will respond to that way, and that plays to his or her base, celebrity journalists. But in terms of Yamiche, she asked the right question, but she didn't get an answer. So that's the problem of this grandstanding, whether it's coming from the reporter or from the public figure, we're not getting the answer. So what was President Trump's answer to that question?
Was not to answer it because it was a race. Because he says it was a racist question.
There was no answer to it, right?
Right.
And the same with the Acosta deal. The point that I'm trying to make is subtle. It's a subtle point, but that's why you have me come on to talk about this, because you have to educate the emerging generation of reporters to understand certain things. Like, yes, you're going to be called names. It's going to be done now on camera. Because we have ubiquitous access, and you're going to have to keep your composure. But don't forget to get the answer to the question. Now, I think he just called on someone else. I can't remember the entire exchange, but I think this happened after his encounter with Acosta, he had lost his composure. But I would tell my students, Yamiche should have said, I'm sorry, Mr. President, that you feel that way, but what is your answer to the question? And I didn't hear her say that.
Right. We have just a few minutes left with Michael Bougeia talking about media, news media ethics. Wanted to get to this question before the time quickly slips away from us. You've written about the ethics of reporting lies. What is a lie, and when should it be called out as a lie, using that word, by a journalist?
Well, to be honest with you, when I was a reporter in the 70s and I was a national correspondent for a wire service, we routinely fact-checked everything that a public figure said. And if I was interviewing Governor Exum in Nebraska or Governor Janklow in South Dakota, and he said something that was a lie or a falsehood or exaggeration, I would fact-check it and then I would report it in the next paragraph. Everybody used to do this. We had time to do it.
But there is a difference between saying something is a lie and something is a falsehood. People have, in the news media today, have a problem taking that extra step to a lie. I'm wondering, when should you use lie?
Well, when you say that someone is lying, then you are making a determination about their viewpoint. You can't necessarily get into their heads. So what you're actually doing is dealing with what we call disinformation. Disinformation means we don't know if this is true. We can't get into the source's head, but it's a falsehood. I would never call anything a lie. I would say that it's false, and I would show the fact. That's what I tell my students. Let the facts speak for themselves. You don't have to label something a lie. Now, we have CNN counting the lies of President Trump, and major news media counting the lies. You know, just label it as a falsehood or an exaggeration if you have to. But why are we infusing? I know why we're doing it is because we have a 24/7 news cycle now. And it used to be that we would have one time for news and we could say that's what the facts were. But right now we are just in this new era where new norms are being created. So, yeah, I just say let the facts speak for themselves. But you know, that's what I try to teach my students.
Mm-hmm. And finally, the Knight Foundation Gallup has showed in recent polling only 33% of Americans have a positive view of the news media. 18 to 29-year-olds polled only get 22% trust in the media. What can be done? Does the new news media have to do something different? Or is that just a product of this social media environment that you've been talking about?
I have just written a piece. I don't know if it's going to be published, but I just wrote a piece about that very topic. I'm at the point now where it's important for Regents Universities, but also perhaps as early as middle school, to start teaching media and technology literacy, because the emerging generations don't know where to go to find that solid fact that's going to inform them. So it's important. It's important for us as educators, and important for Iowa as well.
Yeah, but to be able
to do that.
Right. But very quickly, as you pointed out at the beginning, so many people do not care that there's a factual base of whatever they consume.
Ben, this is what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid that the new normal is we just want affirmation, we don't want information, and we would rather be uninformed but friended.
Mm. What will it take to go from affirmation to having maybe some of our beliefs challenged and getting out of a bubble?
I don't believe it's possible in the short term. The only way that we can do this is with the emerging generations of reporters and audiences. And that's why I think education is the sound way to do it. And I'm glad to be part of Iowa State University and part of that endeavor.
Michael Bougie, thank you for coming into our studio today.
Thank you, Ben.
Professor and director, former director of the Greenlee School of Journalism at Iowa State University, taught ethics, media ethics to journalists for many, many years. And we're appreciative that he came into our studio today. Coming up after a short break, a conversation with Joyce Russell on her last day before retiring from Iowa Public Radio. Yes, you heard that right. Joyce Russell retiring. A conversation with her on her last day, which was Friday, a recorded conversation, highlights personal reflections on her 30 years of work in public radio. That's all coming up after a short break. Joyce Russell with some very interesting reflections, I guarantee it. Stay with us. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.